This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll chat with crime analyst Jeff Asher about the city's violent weekend. Then Jessica Rosegard returns with the Advocate's Stephanie Grace as we wrap up the final day of the legislative session. We'll also talk with Olympic gold medalist Cullen Jones about the Make a Splash initiative. And musician Greg Schatz shares his new album, Small Peace of Mind. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. This past Saturday was the most violent day in New Orleans this year. A total of 13 people were shot, including two killed in a 24-hour span. And it leads residents to question, how bad is shooting violence in the city? Joining me now is crime analyst Jeff Asher. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So how bad is crime in New Orleans this year?
Well, overall crime appears to be up around 8 to 9%, and that includes everything from violent murders to theft, auto theft, pickpockets, things like that. The gun violence, which is typically what people think about when they want to think about the changes in crime, is up about 40 to 50% relative to where we were at this point last year. So it's up quite a bit.
Now, as we look at that number of shooting incidents, how is New Orleans ranked compared to other violent cities like Baltimore and Chicago?
Right now, the city is roughly having the third highest murder rate in the country. New Orleans has had the highest murder rate in the country in something like half of the last 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So being third is not inherently our worst ranking. Last year, the city was fourth. The year before, the city was fourth. The city has been in the top five in terms of murder ranking every year since 1987. So, you know, it not necessarily helps to compare us to other cities because our trend is going up. So we may only be going from fourth to third, but it's because ours is going up and not because other cities are going down. So that's really when I think about it, comparing New Orleans to other cities. It's really the direction of our rate that's more important than necessarily the ranking.
Okay. After Saturday's violence, how many homicides has the city seen this year?
We're at 84 murders so far this year, and that figure is plus 28 relative to where we were last year. So that's plus 50%. We had 56 on this date last year, and we've had 84 so far this year.
Is 2017 shaping up to be one of the most violent years for New Orleans post-Katrina?
Depressingly, no, it's not. It's shaping up to be the most violent year since the mayor's anti-gun violence strategy took effect, NOLA for Life, in late 2012. Our murder rate may be in the range of where we were in 2012. It'll probably be lower than where it was in 2011, when we had a similar number of murders, but we had fewer people in the city. And of course, the murder rate is down almost 50% from where it was in the mid-90s, when the city led the country in murder rate by quite a large margin. In 1994, we had over 430 murders and had arguably the highest murder rate for an American city that's ever been recorded. So things are better than they were before, but that's kind of like comparing the Saint season this year to 1980 when the team went 1-15. It's not really a fair comparison necessarily, even though things are better. If they're not going in the right direction, it's not necessarily something that you want to make that comparison.
Mm-hmm. Looking ahead, we're halfway through the year. Any predictions on an increase or decrease in shooting violence?
It's really hard to predict. Really, gun violence has risen sharply since last summer, and especially starting in about October of 2016. So things are starting to sort of slow down, but there are other metrics in play. There's, you know, I've used some of the data in the city to sort of measure the luck or randomness that happens when a bullet leaves a gun, and whether or not the number of victims that are shot and the number of victims that are fatally shot. Some of the more advanced metrics suggest that the city may be due for a slowdown in number of shootings, but an increase in the percentage of those shootings that produce fatalities. So we may see fewer shootings, but more murders over the second half of the year. Or we may see whatever started last summer taper off for whatever reason, return to a relatively lower level of gun violence and see fewer murders over the second half. At the current rate of gun violence, though, we would expect to see somewhere around 200 or so murders in the city this year, with some deviation above or below that, which would be, if we hit 200, it would only be the second time post-Katrina that New Orleans has had 200 murders.
Okay. Earlier this week, Mayor Mitch Landrieu addressed the news conference acknowledging the underlying problem of crime in the city. As a crime analyst, what can improve crime in the city?
Well, I think that we know through academic research, through research in New Orleans, that gun violence is heavily concentrated. Mm-hmm. If gun violence was sort of evenly, randomly distributed throughout the city, it would be a lot harder to develop countermeasures if any single person was at high risk for involvement in gun violence. But because we're looking at, you know, less than 1% of the city's population that's going to be present at a large number of the shootings, then you can start to develop law enforcement countermeasures. And more importantly, you can develop countermeasures coming from the city itself, giving jobs, educational programs, mental health support to individuals that you've identified as being at high risk. And I think that it's certainly a heavy investment of resources that's needed. But if you want to talk about some of the more sustainable long-term solutions, it has to involve identifying individuals that are at really high risk for involvement in gun violence, and then developing, inventing solutions that can prevent that risk from becoming reality. Other than that, you're just sort of playing with small picture, short-term solutions, mm-hmm. and not even solutions, short-term answers to the problem that aren't going to stop us from having 150 more murders for the 47th straight year, 48th straight year going
right.
forward.
Jeff Asher, crime analyst, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
The regular session for the state legislature ends today, and a lot of issues were left on the table. WWNO's Jessica Rosegard sat down with Stephanie Grace, columnist for The Advocate, to discuss what lawmakers did and didn't get done.
We're here with Stephanie Grace to talk about the 2017 legislative session. Stephanie, thanks for joining me.
Of course.
As the 2017 legislative session comes to a close, it seems that some major financial issues like restructuring the state budget and dealing with next year's fiscal cliff will not be resolved.
You know, legislators really said they were going to do a lot this session. They said they were going to take a hard and fast look at the tax structure, why we keep ending up in these budget shortfalls all the mm-hmm. time, you know, which always hits higher education and healthcare the hardest. And they actually had a task force. They appointed a task force last year to come up with some recommendations. They really didn't take up many of those proposals at all. And it wasn't too long into the session when it became clear that none of these bills would make it out of the House. Mm-hmm. And one thing that means is that we have this fiscal cliff situation.
Right.
We knew that going in, too. And it's almost like the legislature gave itself a deadline and blew right by it, mm-hmm. just ignored it. So last year, knowing that we've been in this cycle of perennial shortfalls, they passed a big sales tax increase, temporary. It expires in 2018. The idea was that they were going to deal with the structural issues and come up with kind of better tax policy this year. Now here we are, and we're looking at basically a loss of $1.3 billion in revenue that's just going to fall off the books a year from now. Mm-hmm. So they need to do something about that. And that probably means another special session coming up. And we don't know. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be the will to do anything mm-hmm. at this point.
Another issue that was kicked down the road is TOPS reform.
Yes. There was a proposal by State Rep Gary Carter, who's a New Orleans Democrat, that would have said, in future shortfalls, the people who should get first crack at a full TOP scholarship are the highest achieving and also the most needy. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's not needs-based, and you know, you don't really need to be the best student in order to get the full scholarship. That didn't even make it out of committee. What did make it out of committee was a proposal to slightly raise the grade point average that high school students would need to achieve on their core curriculum to get a TOP scholarship. That also failed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is something that the cost is escalating. It's an incredibly popular program. The original conception of it was to help people who wouldn't be able to go to college otherwise. Right now, it's very widely used by middle class and even upper class students, mm-hmm. some of whom are stellar students, some of whom are average students.
Right.
So I think, you know, it's a policy decision. It's a hard one.
Moving on to another issue, another It's all about money. The state needs $13 billion for outdated infrastructure projects, and a possible solution was to raise the gas tax, which hasn't happened in about 3 decades. But a tax increase is always a difficult vote.
Always. And we had ideological groups really pushing against it. The State Republican Party, a group called Americans for Prosperity, which is a national group associated with the Koch brothers. Mm-hmm. People have heard of that, which is very active in Louisiana. And the interesting thing is everybody knows we have these needs.
Yeah.
And the original proposal, it was sponsored by a Republican, Steve Carter of Baton Rouge, who feels like he was treated pretty badly by his party structure. And he was, frankly, mm-hmm. because they really went after him. And, you know, it's a courageous thing to do as a Republican to advocate raising taxes. But, you know, there is a need. The original proposal was 17 cents a gallon. They were not able to get that through. They knocked it back to 10 cents a gallon in the hope of getting more votes. This is one of those measures where they needed 2/3 of the legislature. Right. So it was a high bar. And they couldn't get there.
In spite of the issues that were left on the table, the legislature did get some work done, mm-hmm. including an expansion of domestic violence laws, which was sponsored by Representative Helena Moreno.
There were a couple interesting bills. This one expanded the definition of who could be charged with domestic violence to people in dating relationships. Mm-hmm. And obviously, this applies to all kinds of people. There was a separate bill by Patrick Honick from Jefferson Parish, and this actually expanded the definition of domestic violence so that you could have enhanced penalties and things like that to include same-sex couples. Mm-hmm. And this is something that actually they didn't pass it the first time. Its sponsors had to go back and really convince their colleagues, still a pretty conservative legislature.
Right.
But, you know, there were a couple issues with this. One is there is now same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm. The compromise was they actually had to take out the reference to marriage in the law because there were some legislators who didn't want to vote for that. So what they did is they changed the definition of a household to include same-sex couples, but took out married relationship. Mm-hmm. The result is that domestic violence protections are now going to apply to a much broader swath of people.
Mm-hmm. And another big item was a bipartisan criminal reform package, a couple of bills sponsored by Representative Ted James and brought about after Alton Sterling was killed last summer.
Right. The big one is it basically involves de-escalation. It involves mm-hmm. requiring a certain amount of training for police officers to try to de-escalate conflict mm-hmm. in these situations. Ted James does represent Baton Rouge, and it was inspired by what happened with Alton Sterling and the aftermath. And this is an idea where, you know, there was real tension after that, you know, people supporting police versus, you know, worried about how the police behaved. But I think there was some consensus that everybody can agree that de-escalation is good. Mm-hmm. So that did pass pretty easily.
Stephanie Grace, sort of a mixed session for the legislature, bit of do-nothing, but they got a few things done. Stephanie Grace, columnist for The Advocate, thanks for walking us through this 2017 legislative session.
Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Grumpy Gills. When life gets you down, you know what you gotta do?
I don't wanna know what you gotta do.
Just keep swimming, just keep swimming, just keep swimming, swimming, swimming. What do? We swim, swim.
Dory, no singing.
Dory. I love to swim in Dory. When you want to
Did you know that drowning is the second leading cause of accidental death of children in the U.S.? Even more startling, approximately 10 people drown every day. Since 2007, the USA Swimming Foundation's Make a Splash initiative has given nearly 5 million children free or low-cost swim lessons. The Make a Splash tour arrives in New Orleans today with Olympic gold medalist Cullen Jones, and he's joining me now. Cullen Jones, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about the Make a Splash initiative.
Well, the Make a Splash initiative started in 2009, and the USA Swimming Foundation, with the help of Phillips 66, just really wanted to change these drowning rates in the U.S. It's a big problem, and it's at an epidemic level. I think a lot of people don't recognize the issue because it's not in our faces every single day, unfortunately, until something tragic happens. There's a lot of problems out there, the economy for one, that you see every single day. But there is a solution to this problem, and it's a pretty simple one, and it's swim lessons. And the USA Swimming Foundation and Phillips 66 have taken that first step in trying to make sure that no child out there goes without learning, without having formal lessons. And they're giving it at low cost or no cost in certain areas by local partners. So I know it's starting to get warm. It's definitely hot here in New Orleans.
And, oh, yeah, you know it.
People like to get in your water, so especially when it starts to get warm. So it's important that we have these formal lessons.
Now, it's also important that we point out childhood drowning is a risk to children of all ethnic backgrounds.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I know when I started on and for my work, it's always been trying to work with minorities and getting minorities exposed to swimming because we drown at a much higher rate. 64% of African Americans don't know how to swim, and 45% of Latin America doesn't know how to swim, and 40% of Caucasians in the U.S. don't know how to swim. So this is a big problem for the culture of the United States. I mean, there are children drowning, unfortunately, all over, and these formal lessons is something that is going to help to combat that. We've already seen, I've been working with the Make a Splash Initiative for almost 10 years now, and I've seen the numbers starting to come down a little bit, and we were actually, you know, talking about it this last tour stop we were in Houston, and we're starting to see the numbers starting to come down, which is great, but we want to continue to push down on the pedal and make sure that we're trying to get this message out.
So this initiative proves that swimming lessons can reduce the likelihood of accidental childhood drowning.
Absolutely. If you have one parent that knows how to swim, there's a 4 times more likely chance that that child will learn how to swim. My experience, my mom really didn't know how to swim, and my dad did. Unfortunately, at the age of 5, I went down a ride with them at an amusement park, and I almost drowned. But I was part of that 4 times more likely to learn how to swim because my dad got me into swim lessons immediately after that.
Yeah.
So we don't want to see parents, unfortunately, have to go through something like that. We want to kind of head them off and get them equipped and getting their children equipped, especially, like I said, as it starts to get warm, you know, kids are drawn to the water. We want to get them those swim lessons.
How do our listeners get their kids involved with the Make a Splash initiative?
You go to makeasplash.org. USA Swimming Foundation, makeasplash.org. You can go on there and you can sign up your child or another child that you know. And thanks to Phillips 66 and the foundation, it's at low cost or no cost. We have local partners in New Orleans, so you can go and sign up. And there's really no reason why children should not be getting these lessons. It's so important. You would never allow your child to be in a car without a safety belt. Don't allow your child to be near water without having proper instruction.
Absolutely. Now, Cullen Jones, completely unrelated to the Make a Splash initiative. When you're not in the water, when you're not in the pool teaching kids how to swim when you're in New Orleans, what are you doing?
I'm going to be training myself. we have actually world championships in 3 weeks. Our championship trials are in Indianapolis, and then hopefully making the team, I'll be going to Budapest and trying to represent the U.S. again. So I'll be training myself. So some of these young folks might be able to see me in action, actually training while I'm there also.
All right. Olympic gold medalist Cullen Jones, thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Our friend Greg Schatz joins us to talk about his new album, Small Peace of Mind. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So let's start by talking about your early days as a musician.
Yeah, well, I was interested in music from a very young age. I think my parents told me that I would get in trouble in preschool for like singing and humming during what was supposed to be nap time. I think I was always interested in writing songs even before I knew really how to write songs. Mm-hmm. And I started taking piano lessons in first grade. It was first grade. I took piano lessons for a year or two. But it was like high school that I really came back and started to get into music. I started playing electric bass and started playing in rock bands and blues bands and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so I kind of went off in the bass direction for a while and then started getting into sort of ethnic music, different stuff. Started playing the accordion. Also started playing keyboards in a band because I always kind of kept that going on the side as a compositional tool mm-hmm. With a band when I was around 21, 22. And that kind of got me back into playing keyboards, which was nice.
Okay, so when did the move to New Orleans happen for you?
Well, I had visited New Orleans in 1994 when I was on spring break. and it was March, and I thought it was amazing. Mm-hmm. The weather was like in the mid-70s and perfect, and up there it was kind of, the snow was kind of melting, and it was kind of that in-between winter and spring phase where it's kind of gross and wet and cold. Yeah. And I came down here and I was like, wow, this is great.
Until you realize we only have two seasons, hot and cold, right?
Right, right. And I happened to catch that, like, you know, 2 to 3 week in between season, you know,
yeah,
perfect weather. And I had came down here thinking I would spend a little while, you know, playing music, started playing accordion in this blues jug band on the street for a few years, then started playing bass with Jeremy Lyons and the Delta Billy Boys. And then after Katrina, he moved away to Boston. He lives in Boston now. And I was back in New York for a little while, checking out like the Brooklyn music scene, was playing music up there a bit. And then I came back, you know.
Yeah.
That was, you know, so realized that this is in fact the place for me.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
Again, for the second time.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, when I first moved here, I don't think I wasn't in that kind of frame of mind where I was thinking this is where I'm going to be till the end of my life. I was just thinking this is a great place to be right now. My 20s, you know. What a great place. And you know, and then before you know it, it's been over 20 years, so you know, it is the place for me.
Wow. Now let's get into the album, Small Peace of Mind. This is your sixth album. What makes it different than the others?
Well, I'd like to think that they progress in a way. And the first three albums that I did were sort of more accordion oriented. And this is my sixth album of original music and kind of my third solo album just under my name. And the last three are very piano-oriented. I tend to think of them sort of as a trilogy, you know, that they kind of go together. Mm-hmm. So not that there's a story thread that runs all the way through them, but to me, they make sense together. Like, one picks up where the other one leaves off.
Right. Now, Greg, I must admit, I love the title of this album, Small Peace of Mind. It's like, I want a peace of mind, but if I can just get a small peace of mind. tell me, what encouraged the title of this album?
I think that the last several albums I've done, I've had a title that was a fragment of a song lyric. Or it's a lyric from a song. So instead of having a title track, it's a small piece of a song.
Yeah.
So it's that title is from a line in Leave It All Behind, that song. And it says, were you able to find some small piece of mind, you know?
How will you feel at the end of the night? Will you be glad how you spent your time? Were you able to find some small peace of mind? Do you take it all or leave it all behind?
So the album is out now, and you guys are having an album release party on June 9th. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. We're doing our album release party at the Saturn Bar. Really thrilled that we could have it there. We're starting at 9 p.m., so it's like right in between there. Not super early, not super late.
Mm-hmm.
9 p.m. to midnight show. And, you know, the Saturn Bar is very comfortable neighborhood feel, so it's going to be fun.
All right. Well, Greg, thanks so much for stopping by on today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Download the new album, Small Peace of Mind, at schatzymusic.com. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre, and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows, and be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.